Back in 1977, before climate change was in the news, but well after scientists were talking about it and college students were learning about it, Exxon senior scientist James Black informed the company's management committee that there was general scientific agreement that burning fossil fuels was influencing the global climate through carbon dioxide release. He warned that doubling the atmospheric CO2 could increase global temperatures by more than 4 to 6 degrees Fahrenheit. Exxon apparently thought this was a feature, not a bug, as far as energy extraction goes, but kept the information under wraps for decades so the rest of us would not get alarmed, because Exxon realized this was a bug, not a feature, for humans and other living creatures who had yet to be fossilized. Those of us who were concerned about the environment back then were trying to reduce our energy consumption for all kinds of reasons. Concerns about rising carbon dioxide levels were certainly part of it. But most of us were even more concerned about the heavy toll on air, water, and soils that transportation and electrical use were exacting. Russ and I bought our Ford Pinto in 1971 because it was the smallest car we could afford, figuring the weight of a vehicle was a good indicator of its fuel consumption. It wasn't until 1975 that Congress established the Corporate Average Fuel Economy, or CAFE, standards, and not until 1978 that they started requiring manufacturers to openly display the miles per gallon rating on the window sticker of new vehicles. CAFE standards would have saved a whole lot more fossil fuel if auto manufacturers hadn't worked a deal in which they could call minivans and then SUVs light trucks rather than passenger vehicles, escaping stricter mileage requirements. Automakers continue to make fuel efficiency high priority for comparison shoppers, but because customers want increasingly huge cars, mileage for individual vehicles has barely increased. It was not easy figuring out how much energy each of our home appliances used until 1992, when the EPA and Department of Energy started the Energy Star program. That program has saved 5 trillion kilowatt hours of electricity, more than $500 billion in energy costs, and prevented 4 billion metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions. Many people use Energy Star information to save money on their monthly utility bills, but I'm sure Russ and I are far from the only ones who also want to protect the air and water quality our children and grandchildren will be living with after we're gone. We, of course, need a car and home appliances. We simply want to minimize our energy consumption while using them. The Energy Star program was designed to show us how our purchases affect our utility bills when our homes were where virtually all that energy was consumed. But now, a great deal of the electricity expended when we use our cell phones, tablets, gaming consoles, computers, and smart appliances involves big data centers. Every time we listen to a podcast, stream a video, check whether someone's flight is on time, do a quick search on a recipe, use an app to identify a plant or animal, save a photo or file on Dropbox or other cloud service, use our phone's GPS, track our fitness, shop online, use an app to get a ride, use a credit card in a store, or just about anything else, we're using power and water from one or more data centers. Some of our off-site energy uses are very small. Asking a quick question on a search engine may take less energy than using a microwave oven for 1 second. But some uses are surprisingly, even shockingly, huge. A single Bitcoin transaction uses 707.6 kilowatt hours of electricity, which is more than a month's total electrical consumption at my house. Scamming people and using cryptocurrency for illegal transactions are inherently bad, as is generative AI when it produces and disseminates deep fakes and false information or helps students cheat on tests and papers. But a great many data center uses are innocuous or genuinely beneficial, except for their carbon footprint and other environmental costs. How can we cut the waste without losing the valuable elements of modern technology? We allow the biggest commercial and industrial energy squanderers to purchase their electricity at a significantly lower per kilowatt hour rate than residential users, when the heaviest users should be paying at least as much as or more than residential users do, as an incentive to reduce usage and invest in renewable energy. Yes, it's expensive to do that, as I can attest after Russ and I put in our solar panels and heat pump. Our energy savings are not likely to offset what we paid for them for decades, but this wasn't a financial investment. It was an investment in our children's and grandchild's future, and in the world my chickadees, blue jays, and pileated woodpeckers depend on, too. Corporations whose primary mission is to make money for their shareholders in the immediate future need regulations and cost incentives to do what's right. We should also be incorporating a system like Energy Star for everything, app, game, cloud storage, etc., that involves off-site energy usage, and we should be given clear and easy opt-outs for the AI elements of every app and search engine we use, or a clear warning on those that inherently use AI. The auto industry was as critical to a functioning American society in the 1970s as high tech is today. Regulations and cost incentives hardly solved our problems then, but they at least helped. We consumers deserve to know how much energy we're using and what each of us can do to make this brave new world of high tech more sustainable. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.